in everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let them play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, I want to put on my best Will Muschamp scrowl and mutter profanities for about 45 minutes, but my therapist says that's not very productive. You have any better ideas?
Man, I don't think that's going to do any good after this game. You could do that for 45 minutes and I can do it for 45 minutes and we can swap turns and do it for, you know, a whole 24 hours and a whole day. And we'll still be pretty pissed off after this one.
Yeah. I'm trying to find some silver lining and I can't get past the fact that we just lost to Auburn.
Well, what's more frustrating is there's two things that's the most frustrating to me. First of all, is all of the weaknesses that we highlighted in the preseason podcast, all the positions that we could be concerned about, they all manifested themselves in this one ball game. And so whether it was the offensive line and how they would come together between the silly penalties, whether it was Jalston Fowler missing an easy block on that 4th-and-1 with 5 minutes left, had he just done his job, Yeldon would have probably even scored a touchdown, much less a yard.
Yep.
The receivers, how were they going to step up? The cornerback, this whole multiple cornerback thing finally bit us with Cyrus, in my opinion. Cyrus had some, really boneheaded plays.
He did.
And then I guess, probably lastly, defensive line. We said we were going to miss Jesse Williams and the days of, Jesse Williams and Cody and or Mount Cody and all. And, they got so much success up the middle because we didn't have that guy in the middle of the defense that takes on double teams like we've been accustomed to.
Yep.
And so
yep.
I can highlight several things that we talked about in the preseason. It all came to roost in one ball game.
And what's, conspicuous in absence is, we talked about the kicking game and that if we need to come down to a situation to kick a field goal to win, that we might find ourselves in trouble. And I don't say that to point the finger at Cade. And I think a lot of people are doing that. And some of what people are doing are just, kind of off the reservation. But, we had opportunities to win outside of, the 4 field goal attempts, but certainly any of those would have helped to win the game as well. And, it sounds a little self-serving, but, I hate that we were right on so many of those things. This far into the season, it looked like maybe we had kind of missed the boat on some of those. Unfortunately, some of those circled back to be right.
Oh, they did. And with the Cade Foster thing, that's not pointing a finger at Foster. It is saying that would there come a time or would our play calling this year be different in the, in the between the 25 and 35, unlike last year when we had a sure thing at field goal kicker, would it change the way we do things? And I think that's the bigger point is that when you have 4th-and-1 with 5 minutes left at the 12-yard line, and I think Nick Saban is going to have many sleepless nights on this play call. I sat there during the game and said, 4th-and-1, if you can't get a first down, you don't deserve to play for the national title. And I still believe that. But
yeah.
4th-and-1 with 5 minutes left up by 7, as lack of an explosive offense as Auburn has, you kick a field goal there, the game is over. And so while you can point to 15 things that went wrong in this game, that one to me is the top. I agree with our friend Greg that commented in some emails that just went against his grain, and that went against what Saban normally does, and I think that was the wrong call.
Yeah, I think that I agree with that, and I've purposely stayed away from Greg's email because I don't want it to you know, coming into recording this, I didn't want that to, you know, necessarily influence some of my opinions, and, you know, I'll follow up on that afterwards. But, you know, I wonder if he wasn't a little bit, you know, talking about Coach, if he wasn't a little bit gun shy after a couple of the misses, and he said, you know, basically said, look, after a couple of those misses, you know, kind of back to your point, if we can't convert on fourth and one, we don't deserve to win the ball game. We don't deserve to compete for championships. And so, guys, I'm putting it all on, you know, I'm putting it on your backs. I'm putting it on the offensive line. I'm putting it on, you know, our best running back. I'm putting it on, you know, multiple players to execute. And, you know, if we're talking about the same play, you know, that's where Fowler looked like he whiffed on a block and, you know, Yeldon was taken down in the backfield. One thing that strikes me about this game, and, you know, and I kind of call that out, you know, about Cade, because, you know, I've seen and read that, you know, he's getting death threats and he's getting, you know, all sort of, you know, kind of vile behavior. And it's, you know, embarrassing to say that's our fan base doing that. And, you know, one thing that, you know, kind of crystallizes for me, and, you know, going back and watching this game again, and that was a painful experience. In some regards, it reminds me of the 2010 game where so many things just went, you know, explicably wrong, except for in 2010, it was so many, you know, just kind of one-off things that was so obvious to everyone. You know, Mark Barron not being able to play and defend that pass after, you know, having a sensational three quarters of the ball game because of his injury. You know, Mark Ingram, you know, his fumble that hugs the sideline. You couldn't point your finger at those types of players and those types of plays, but it's so easy to point to the kicker. But I think that's such the lazy way out, because there's so many things that went wrong in this game that if just a couple of them turned our way, I mean, we were stuffed, you know, third and two, second and two, third and one, fourth and one. You know, those are all running plays that were stuffed. We had five drops: Norwood, DeAndre, Christian Jones, Amari Cooper twice. We overthrew Amari on what could have been a touchdown. We had two penalties that killed first downs. We had a penalty that killed a field goal. We missed three field goals. We had a field goal block. We had a punt block. We were pinned at our 1 yard line twice, and we yielded a big return. I mean, you look at all of those things, you can't. There's no person or name that easily attaches to all of those, and so it's easy just to blame the kicker. But if just a couple of those things, and late in the game, if one of those things goes, we win the game.
Oh, sure. And, you know, I agree with you that, you know, it was so frustrating that there were so many things like you just listed that, you know, for it to be 13 to 15 things, you know, and only a couple, you know, could have made, you know, a huge difference in this game is very frustrating, because typically you say four or five plays are the difference. Well, it was three times that many. And I will say something else that you can add to this with those drop passes is AJ. I mean, I think the team came out playing very tight in the first quarter. And I would attribute three or four of those drops, while they were catchable passes, they were bad passes by AJ. AJ was not throwing the ball worth a darn in the first quarter. He threw the ball woefully behind Kevin Norwood on one play, and Kevin Norwood just made him look good. But he overthrew Christian on that one. He had DeAndre White wide open on a slant pattern and threw it way over his head. Even being pinned at the 1 yard line, he threw off his back foot in the end zone. And don't get me wrong, it still was great that he completed the passes. But had he aired the ball out to Amari Cooper, Amari beat his man both times.
Yes.
And both times he had to wait for the ball. And had AJ just been able to step into the throw, because to his credit, he had pressure in his face, had he been able to step into both of those throws, those are both touchdowns. Because I think that's the reason they went back to Amari the second time is because on that other big pass, he was 5 yards behind the guy. So it's very frustrating that I still feel like they're a mediocre team. You know, and maybe mediocre is too harsh. But I agree with Jesse Palmer, man. You know, the Florida quarterback that works for ESPN. You know, they were asking him last night, they were like, who are the two best teams? And he picked Florida State and then he picked Alabama. And I just wanted to say this because I want to give him credit. And he was like, you know, he said Alabama is still one of the two best teams in the country. He said if they played Auburn nine more times, he said they'd win eight of them. And for the listeners, that's the way I firmly feel. Does it matter? Did we lose? Yes. Did we deserve to win? No, we did not deserve to win making all these boneheaded mistakes. But I will not say they're one of the two best teams because they're not.
No, I won't say that either. I'll say a couple things. You know, with all of the things that kind of conspired against us, for it to have taken a miracle play like that at the end, you know, to win or at least to keep it from overtime, I think that speaks to how well we played, you know, in other aspects of the game. You know, I will say that. I will also say that, you know, they're better than a mediocre team, and they definitely showed, you know, some capability. I'm not a big fan of kind of their style, and that, you know, it beat us, so that's a more of a preference or taste. But I thought they were a little more disciplined in their play than I expected them to be. And I certainly expected them to turn the ball over more than the one time that they did. Well, so I do want to give them credit. I don't want to just sound like, you know, a sourpuss. I do want to give them credit, you know, for some of the circumstances and some of the play. I mean, they stuffed us on some of these runs. You know, that, you know, they loaded up on the line and maybe they gambled, maybe they called our play. I don't know, but they stuffed us in situations where we've not seen a lot of that this season.
Well, and we can just go ahead and, you know, this can be part of our offensive discussion.
Sure. But,
you know, even like Gary Danielson pointed out in the game, you know, with Chad Lindsey getting the start, you know, he commented in the first or second quarter that they were starting to key on Chad Lindsey. And that Chad Lindsey was telegraphing when he was going to snap the ball.
Yep.
There were several times that he snapped the ball low to AJ in the shotgun. And it made me wonder. It was like, well, then just go get yourself under center then. Because several times he snapped it low. And then he seemed to compensate and, you know, be very deliberate in looking back. Okay, am I sure? Am I sure about the depth? Okay, now snap the ball. And so they were starting to key, and they were starting to time their rush based on how he snapped the ball.
Yep.
And I do not think that there was a coaching adjustment made there. I tried to watch and see if his motion changed throughout the game, and I didn't see it change much. He hesitated a little, but not a whole. He really didn't vary it too much after it was pointed out.
No, he really didn't. Now, you know, part of what helped, you know, point it out was, you know, we caught them, you know, a step early before he snapped it. And so I don't know if that was just a nervous tick where he kind of held the ball an extra second, even after he went through his routine and they jumped. And so we got, you know, a penalty there, or if that was intentional. I'd have to think that if that were intentional, then you would incorporate some change, you know, kind of the rest of the way. And so it makes me wonder, you know, and I wish I had the free time to do this, but it makes me wonder, you know, gosh, let's go back and look at those other games that Lindsey played. And, you know, was that something that they picked up on film?
Well, I will say that if they truly picked it up, okay, these guys didn't pick it up on their own in the football game. In my opinion, that had to be from, you know, that had to be from coaches and film, right? These guys didn't just pick it up on the fly, you know, in the first quarter kind of deal.
That's fair.
But you know, I will say, you know, while we're talking about Lindsey, you and I obviously felt good about Lindsey and what he had when he did have to step in for Kelly. I felt like he was outmatched in this ball game on that fourth and one play. You know, we'll never know where Yeldon was supposed to go. I kind of wish he would have gone behind Steen. But then again, when you go back and watch the replay, Steen and Shepard are double teaming a guy and they don't even move the guy, the two of them. I mean, he stays in his place.
Yeah.
But on that play, Lindsey was driven back. And so if Yeldon had any thought of trying to cut back to the right, that was removed because Lindsey was all the way back in the backfield.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, and we've called this out a couple of times during the season, you know, down on the goal line, you know, some of the pulls and down blocking schemes that we've run, you know, with the express purpose of making the blocks easy. And we've kind of dissected that and you know, kind of stepped through that. It makes me wonder, why don't we pull out some of those, you know, situations? Because a fourth and one there is more important than a second and one at the goal line against, you know, roast beef tech, right? You know, that fourth and one, that third and one in those situations is so much more important.
It is. And when you go back and dissect that fourth and one play, what's so frustrating is even though Lindsey is basically man on man and you know, he maintains his position, but he's driven back. Airy and Cyrus block down and Vogler blocks down. And what's so frustrating when you go back and watch the tape of that, because when I first watched the game, I was like, okay, well, why did we telegraph that by running to the left? Okay, because we had an overloaded formation to the left. And so when you go back and look at it, they only had two down linemen outside of the nose, and then they had a cornerback standing up in a two-point stance.
Right.
So just to clarify, they only have three guys on the left side of the line of scrimmage. We have five. We have Airy, Cyrus, Vogler, Jostin Fowler, and DeAndre White. And we only had to go a half a yard.
Right.
So we had five guys lined up there to block three guys because the other four guys are standing up, you know, 3 yards off the ball. So my point is that there's no way we shouldn't have gotten that freaking, you know, first down.
Right.
So I will say that the way we lined up on the play, you know, the only way we don't make that play is if you leave a guy unblocked, which is what they did, which is so frustrating.
Right.
And so Saban probably said, I've got the right play call here. We can get this. I still think he should have just kicked the field goal. And then when, you know, and then when when Cade Foster makes his field goal, we get the penalty. And then he attempts the 33-yarder. Oh, my gosh. That attempt looked so pathetic. It's like, how do you nail it at 28 yards and then your 33-yarder looks like my golf shot? How do you do that?
Yeah, that was his second attempt there was horrible. And you know, I'm not necessarily piling on Cade, but
no, I'm not either. I'm just saying, how do you do that?
I tell you what's frustrating though is, you know, Ari moved there. He did move, and you know, even CBS had to, you know, cut to a commercial and come back and, you know,
to find it.
To find it. And so that speaks to how you know, minuscule the move was. And I'm convinced, and this is not a conspiracy thing, this is just the reality of this is how slight the movement was. If it is, as you know, if you're the official there and you're watching for movement across the line, you know, you're scanning across, you know, five, six, seven guys, depending upon, you know, tight ends and such, you know, right there at the line. And you kind of scan back and forth like tennis, you know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And if someone just, you know, lurches out or stands up or something, it draws your eye. It's very close. You know, it's very easy to spot. But the way that he just flinched, I mean, he just flinched like he, you know, passed gas or something, you know, just so minuscule that you had to have your eyes just right on him when he did it. Because it was just so... it was so minuscule. And no, look, I'm not saying they shouldn't have thrown the flag. It's just so frustrating that,
we could watch the game and see, you know, false starts worse than that. That's what I was going to say, man. While he did move, okay, and that is true, 9 out of 10 times that doesn't get called in a game.
Not that slight.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, you know, they showed one camera angle where, you know, Vern and Danielson were, you couldn't see the move. You know, it's like a, you know, the replay where you have to look at it from six different angles to see was his knee down before the ball. It was that type of scrutiny. They had to look at multiple angles to determine whether or not he moved. Did he? Yes. But that level of scrutiny on, you know, to determine a false start like that, I've never seen that.
Oh, no. You know, just to jump to another subject here on offense, which I'm sure you're going to bring up in a minute. You know, why did Kenyon Drake only get four carries?
I have no idea on that one. I you know, I've got a whole thing that I want to talk about on you know, and he got all of his carries on the fourth possession of the game, which was our first scoring possession. You know, the drive started on the 33. He got 33 yards, which essentially, you know, was enough to flip the field, you know, to the 34 if you kind of string them together all in a row. He had three of his four carries consecutive. On first down, he rushed, you know, for 11, you know, to get a first down. He got 9 yards on that first down, and then he got 6 yards for the first down after that. Six plays later in the same drive, it was an 11-play drive, so it tied the longest drive that we had of the game. Six plays later, on first and goal from the 10, he had a 7-yard run to the 3, and then we bring in Yeldon. And I thought that was, to me, that was just so surprising. He was playing so hot. You know, the whole mantra when you have multiple running backs is stick with a hot hand. You know, Drake was hot, man. He was, you know, let's give him that run at the goal line. You know, maybe try to run him to the edge because of his speed, and, you know, maybe he gets the edge. But he demonstrated so much on that drive. Well, I don't know why he wasn't in more in the game.
Well, and just to be fair to Yeldon, okay, Yeldon had a good game numbers-wise. I just don't understand, to keep Yeldon fresh, why we didn't see more Drake when we've seen them alternate even on the same series during the course of the season. And so late in the game, I'm sitting here thinking, well, it's just so tight right now that he wants to go with his starters because that's what we've seen him do in yep. tight situations. But when you go back and look at the final stats and you see, okay, Yeldon's got 26 rushes for 144 yards. And you're like, well, he only lost 3 yards on 144. So he obviously was getting positive yardage. And oh, by the way, he averaged 5.4 yards.
Sure.
That's awesome. That's awesome. But you got two dynamic players. Instead of 26 carries and 4 for Drake, it should have been 20 for Yeldon and 10 for Drake. And I would argue 6 less carries for Yeldon keeps him fresher, and maybe that average goes up a little bit to 6.5 yards a carry. And what could Drake have done with 6 more carries? So I don't know if they just got in a rut and Saban just forgot about it and the offensive coordinator, you know, went with it. It makes you think there was something deliberate there, because for him to come in for that one little time and that be it, it makes you wonder what happened in the game. I mean, the conspiracy theorist is like, well, what happened? Because something had to be up, because when he was in there, man, he had the Auburn defense. That little extra speed had Auburn's defense on their heels.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and I kind of took Sunday and you said, look, I don't want to think about this game. And so, you know, late Sunday and, you know, early this morning, I got up and watched all of our offensive snaps again. And I was waiting to hear something about, you know, what he was injured, or, you know, when I read some articles, you know, kind of catching up on kind of what some of the talk was, I expected to find something where he was hurt. And, you know, to this point, I have not. And when you start breaking down, and, you know, I hate to kind of, you know, point the finger, and I don't mean it this way, but if I had to circle, what's the biggest question, or, you know, and there's multiple things, you know, the 4th-and-1, why didn't we, you know, why did we miss a block, or, you know, why did OJ Howard hold on, you know, what, you know, potentially could have been a, you know, that wide receiver screen to DeAndre White that, you know, potentially even could have been a touchdown. The two guys in motion. Yeah. Well, he held on a Yeldon run that would have been a touchdown. We had two guys in motion at the same time on the opposite side of the formation receiver screen to DeAndre, which tells me that probably would have been a touchdown.
And it didn't look to me, by the way, real quick, when they went back and showed that replay, it didn't look to me like they were moving at the same time.
No.
And just for the people listening, I'm not trying to be nitpicky, right? I think the mere fact that you and I can point out to this many, right, is why this is a bigger deal. Because if we had 3 or 4 bad calls go against us, right, we would be the ones that were sitting here, you know, pouting over spilt milk. But the fact that we're sitting here coming up with 15 to 20 different things is why this is such an anomaly.
Well, and it is. And, you know, and I don't know if I said this well, you know, when I talked about it before, but it's similar because it's so many anomalies sort of at once. And so in that regard, it's similar to the 2010, but in 2010, they were very overt what the anomalies were. I mean, you know, it was, you know, we've kind of kidded before that, you know, we want to talk about the details that like the casual fan isn't going to notice.
Right.
Well, the casual fan noticed all of the, all of the things in 2010, because how could you not? That's a better way to say it.
How could you not miss that? And anybody could have seen those.
Right. But in this game, and I don't want to, again, I don't want this to necessarily sound self-serving either, but in this game, so many of these things you wouldn't have known if you weren't paying attention.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I had people, you know, ask me in the office today, well, why did he try a 57-yard kick with the same kicker that had missed so many field goals? Well, it's a different kicker.
Yeah.
It was a different kicker. And then so you want to peel that back a layer. You know, you see people talking about, why do you take a redshirt off a kicker to bring him in his pressure situation that he's never kicked in before? It's the Iron Bowl. Well, no, I'm sorry. You don't pay attention. He is a redshirt freshman, which means we're not burning a redshirt. It means he was redshirted last year, you know, kind of know the terminology. And he has kicked or participated in almost every game this season. So it's not like you're digging some guy from out under the bench to go do something he's never done before.
No, but while you're on this topic, I didn't agree with the play call. You know, at the time, I didn't know that, you know, they had the wind at their back at the time of watching it. But I was very surprised that we didn't just try to let AJ, you know, throw a pass in the end zone. The way we had gotten behind their cornerbacks, I guess I'll say it a different way. If I have my chance there at the 38-yard line with a fifth-year starting quarterback who's 36-2 and the winningest quarterback in Alabama history, I'm giving him a shot before I give the redshirt freshman who's kicked a 60-yarder in practice, grant you, to nail a 57-yarder. I think that was I didn't agree with the call.
Well, And, you know, and that's probably where we'll disagree, because, you know, I've heard a lot of that, and all of that sounds nice. It sounds kind of flowery and all American and give the guy a shot and you know, all of that. But that's a much easier play to defend. Now, you know, in hindsight, it's 20-20, right? Well, if you don't attempt the field goal, then, you know, they don't get to return it. You know, not that they couldn't return an interception, not that they couldn't have blocked the field goal. There's risks. You know, with, you know, anytime the ball's in play, there's a risk, right? And so, well, they're going to line up all their DBs at the goal line and
sure.
You know, you're not getting into the end zone, essentially. And so you say, well, we're not going to get into the end zone, even if we complete a pass. And so so rather than, you know, let's charge the hill almost, let's take a sniper shot at our target. That's maybe a bad analogy, but
oh no,
you know,
I get what you're saying.
They're not going to let us in the end zone, so let's take our best shot right here.
Well, I just think that I would have done the Hail Mary. Now, obviously, I didn't even fathom, you know, the guy's going to sit there and return it. I mean, whenever it started happening, you know, we can talk about this in special teams, but shortly after he started running back, I could see it was going to be a touchdown.
Yeah,
I was like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, son of a gun.
Oh yeah,
but. Even the plays before that, you know, just to keep it real like we do, the plays before it were piss poor. You know, yes. when Auburn scored the touchdown, what you did to even get in position was very poor. And so I would have put the game on AJ from the get-go in the two-minute offense a la LSU last year.
Sure.
And that's what I would have done to start with. But even to be fair, when you lucked, because let's face it, right? I kind of think Saban had to be playing for overtime. See, what's so funny about this is you would think he was playing for overtime by how conservative the play calls were leading up to the 1 second controversial play.
Yes.
Because Yeldon got 24 yards on that draw, right? Yep. I guarantee you he didn't think he was going to get 24 yards, which put him at the 38. Now I'd have to look up and see where he was when the play started, but you know, he probably thought that was the last play of the game, and I'm going to overtime. So then it's like, well, I'm not prepared for this, and now I've got time to think about this because they're doing all this. Was there a second left on the clock? And so I think if Saban had it to do over again, he wouldn't have done that play. That's just my gut. So I could be wrong, but I think he was kind of put into a situation that he wasn't prepared for because he didn't think that Yeldon would even get to the 38-yard line in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that was a 24-yard draw. And so, and you know, and he just, you know, just barely got out of bounds. Yeah, I agree. Now, you know, kick the field goal, that's one thing. You know, we could have been more aggressive. You know, I think we started that drive with 25 seconds, and so there wasn't a whole lot of time to do, you know, quite a lot. But, yeah, I think that I think we thought the draw, and in effect, we ran two draws. You know, we had a 9-yard and then that one for 24. So I think that we were expecting Tom to just kind of, you know, wind out. And then when we found ourselves with, you know, house money, right, we just said, well, just put it all on red then.
Right, right. Well, Drake was a big thing I wanted to get to. I also wanted to get to just the flow of the game real quick before we flip to Auburn on offense. You know, I think this also speaks to having a bullseye on your back week in and week out. And I probably should have said this at the beginning because, you know, it seems like we're piling on and we're really not. We just try to point out and,
sure,
and keep it real. But I don't want to – I want to make sure I point out here real quick that these guys have been gunned for week in and week out like no other team has for years now. And so we've seen how teams have buckled under the pressure – in years past, when Alabama has been able to sneak back in the national championship game with their one loss,
yep,
right? Because these other teams, they get to be in the spotlight for one freaking week, and they can't handle it.
And they can't handle it.
And so to the Oklahoma States of the world and the Kansas States of the world, right, and the Oregons of the world, it's like, guys, in years past, y'all buckled in the second week in November because you didn't plan on being here. So for all we're saying, I also want to just say that this team has had to take every team's best shot every freaking week.
Yep.
And guys, just be glad to be a Bama fan. It sucks, and I'm pissed, and I'm not going to get over this for a while, okay? But we have won 3 national championships in the last 5 years, and that'll never happen again in a 5-year stretch. And just look back at it and say, and just take all that in for a second.
Sure. You know, before 09, it was 17 years.
Yeah.
So
I just wanted to say that real quick because I think that's important to comment on. Anything else on the offensive side for you?
I just wanted to just, you know, I kind of want to, you know, nerd out a little bit on, and we talked a little bit about the play to Amari, but we lined up there, you know, we had 2 consecutive possessions starting on the 1. And the first time we ran on 1st and 2nd down, we lined up with 2 tight ends, a halfback, a running back, and 1 wide receiver. And it was, in fact, the first down of the first possession, it was DeAndre. And then, you know, we moved over Amari. And so we went for the pass on 3rd down. And we had 2 other receivers on the field, you know, the opposite side. And, you know, just as you called it, you know, we underthrew Amari, or that would have been a touchdown. It was good concentration on his part. You know, he caught the ball, the safety was there, and, you know, was able to push him out of bounds. And he ran a little kind of out and up, just a real subtle move to create some separation from the corner that was on him. And so I went back and just kind of side by side compared those 2 plays. And so the first one was on 3rd down, and it was, you know, that kind of formation. The second one we ran on 1st down, and we ran it out of the same formation that we did 1st and 2nd down on the previous possession. And so it looks like more of a max protect, you know, goal line situation where you're just trying to get a couple yards. And so we lined up in that, you know, real heavy, 2 tight ends, halfback, you know, running back, and then receiver, and it happened to be Amari. And, you know, AJ just stood back and let it fly. I think he had kind of dialed in, you know, what Amari's range was going to be on that pattern. And, you know, he hit it in stride, and it was just, you know, so subtle, him having to wait that half a tick for the ball. Because the first time he waited that half a tick and the safety knocked him out of bounds. The second time he didn't have to wait, and the safety just kind of clipped his leg, but not enough to impact his ability to regain and run into the touchdown. And so that just that little, you know, heartbeat of a second that he had to hold up the first time, you know, that cost that being a touchdown.
Oh, it did. And even on the second time, when you go back and watch it in the slow-mo, he had to wait, and he had his guy beat bad on both times.
Yep.
I do like the breakdown of how we lined up, because it was good that we were showing the same formation with the max protect. But it, with all the times that we had, you know, what I think were missed throws early in that game with AJ, I am surprised that, you know, I'm a little surprised that we didn't just pass more in the second half than we did.
Yep.
Because I know we want to strike balance, and we had 35 rushes on the day and 29 passes, but I think all the third and shorts that you sat there and went through earlier, I would have liked us. I guess what I'm saying is I think our receivers had their way with their secondary. And I don't think we took as much of an advantage of it as I wish we would have.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. We had some opportunities I think we left on the table. I think we tried to, you know, we tried too hard to make their ass quit with the running game, as opposed to, you know, we can just run them all over the field with a passing game.
Well, and then that would have just, you know, then that would have just taken, you know, that would have just opened up things a little bit, you know, more for the running game. And I guess real quick before we flip the field to Auburn offense, you know, it's just, you know, I think somebody that I read, you know, wrote that we had 19 plays in the fourth quarter, you know, 19 plays in on their side of the field. And it's just really frustrating, you know, because our defense, you know, I mean, I guess not to jump ahead to defense. It's just frustrating that we had so many opportunities with the ball so late in the game, you know, deep in their red zone.
Yep.
And we didn't come away with any points. I think I read somebody wrote that for all the chances we had, right? How ironic is it that our last touchdown came on that 99-yard pass that you just mentioned to Amari?
Right. No, I think we definitely had some opportunity. We definitely should have capitalized on, you know, the defense. You know, there was a stretch there in the third and fourth quarter where the defense played very, very well. And if we could have made it a two-score game, that would have adjusted how Auburn played offense.
The passing the ball.
Yep. Which I think would have helped our defense. But when they maintain the ability to do, you know, have their full playbook because they only needed a score, I think that just wore on us, and then they created some tendencies. And so I know we're kind of, you know, look, we're frustrated about this game, so we're kind of all over the place. And that's, you know, that's okay. Why don't we kind of plant a flag in terms of, you know, kind of shifting from offense to defense? And as we do that, why don't you take a stab at giving me your mini game ball?
Man, the mini game ball is tough for me on offense, just because, you know, there really wasn't any mini game ball performance for me per se, you know, that really stood out. You know, I guess in the spirit of the mini game ball, if I had to give it to somebody, you know, I'm probably going to sarcastically give it to Drake, who while he's a headliner as a backup, you know, of all the offensive guys, I think he's the spark that, for his limited work of four carries with the healthy 33 yards, you know, for all the reasons we said earlier, I'm going to give it to Drake.
Well, I'm giving it to Drake, you know, Drake as well. And and I'm, you know, as enthusiastically as I can in this game, I'm giving it to him. So not sarcastically, you know, he, you know, our first possession, we were stuffed on a third and two, had to punt. Our second possession, you know, we had a Norwood drop that we had to punt. Our third possession, DeAndrew had a drop. We had to punt. Our fourth possession, we rotate in Drake. He had a little bit of a spark there. I think that carried over to the defense. The next was, you know, the next, you know, when Auburn had the ball, they fumbled. Landon Collins got the ball, and then we came back, and, you know, we had some life there. You know, maybe I'm overstating it, but I think Drake had some responsibility in kind of breathing that into us, and some of the spark that he showed at the running back position helped us. It, you know, even though he didn't score it, he got us down to the three. And, you know, helped us drive to score for the game tying touchdown. I think as a team, we were able to kind of, all right, let's exhale. Let's release a little bit. Let's not play so tight. And I think he played a key role in that. And, you know, why we did not go back to him will remain one of the bigger questions that I'll have about this game. You know, even after, you know, we kind of let the frustrations, you know, fade away and everyone, you know, continues to point at, you know, the things that they point at. One of the things that's always going to kind of haunt me on this one is why Drake didn't play more.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, flip the field to defense. What was your takeaway on Auburn offense and how we did defensively?
The little option that they run, you know, I thought they ran it pretty effectively. They were much better, and I thought Danielson did a good job of talking about this. They're much better on the inside runs. And I think that goes straight to your point that we didn't have a Jesse Williams or a Cody, or we didn't have someone that could kind of, you know, blow that up. And so you think a team like this that's good at the inside runs, if you could blow up the middle of the defense, you know, their offensive line, then you really would, you know, be able to shut them down. And I thought that we would be able to do that. We just were not. And again, it's something that you've been calling, you know, from the beginning that, you know, that we don't have that kind of big body in there that can be devastating like that. And I thought we'd be okay. I thought, you know, this season, and, you know, we were until, you know, we weren't. I think that's the big thing that stands out to me.
Well, you know, let me just say that I felt like we would stop the run. We would force the, you know, Nick Marshall to beat us with his arm. And I was wrong on that. You know, I kidded about the paper tiger and the,
yep,
you know, the 300 yards that Auburn had, you know, per game, ranking second, I think.
Yeah, behind Army.
They ironically, you know, got right at their average of 300 yards. And so to me, it's the same offense that they ran in 2010, which we shut down woefully for them in the first half. And so the action of the triple option prevents a defense from really selling out and blitzing the quarterback very much, especially when a quarterback can run like he can.
Yep.
And so you prevent the team from blitzing. They were not having success going outside. They only rushed to Corey Grant a couple times outside, and then we kind of figured that out.
Yep.
And so what I will say real quick is I was surprised at how much Trey DePriest played in this ballgame. And what I mean by that is that they were running the ball inside, right? And so you're going to have him in the game instead of an additional secondary person. But in some situations, they were isolating away from CJ so that the guy on Nick Marshall was not CJ, but it was Trey DePriest. And I didn't go back and break down each play on this, but several times, Nick Marshall ran to Trey's side, not to CJ's side, and he was able to run around him.
Yep.
And so it made me think, well, gosh, I wish a Geno Smith was in the game there instead of a Trey DePriest sometimes. And so I wish we would have done some more dime and maybe just had CJ as our only linebacker and had him as a spy on Nick Marshall.
Or play the dime and walk Landon down to really more of a linebacker position.
Either one. I just felt like, you know, I don't think we made a lot of adjustments. I mean, we didn't talk about this at the beginning of this podcast, but I don't think I did not see where we made a lot of adjustments in this game on either offense or defense, to be fair.
No, you know, I don't either. I think later in the game, we saw more of Geno. And then maybe that's, you know, because we thought they were going to be in a desperate mode and maybe passing a little bit more than they were. No, I don't think that there was a whole lot of adjustments. I would have expected some, especially some tweaks. You know, I thought we were out of position on defense. And, you know, like you said, you know, they're going to keep setting up and running towards, you know, DePriest. You know, why don't just before the snap we have them switch positions or something even as subtle as that, you know, could have had some impact.
Oh, absolutely. And what was frustrating about Auburn's offense, and this is not to take anything away from them, is, you know, they always talk about explosive plays, right? Well, they had a couple really big plays that accounted for a ton of yards in this ball game.
Sure.
And so, you know, on that first touchdown that Nick Marshall runs 45 yards, that's a big chunk. And, you know, and then we seem to shut them down. And so until right there at the end of the half, and we're kind of dominating 21-7 at this point. And what do? We freaking let Mason get like a 40-yard scamp. Right. Yep. And so, and then, you know, I want to separately break down that last touchdown in a minute, which was a 40-yard play.
Sure.
And so, uncharacteristic for this team, we gave up, you know, if you go back and take out a couple big plays, we really played pretty well against them. But it's kind of like Nick Saban said, you got to be disciplined every single play. And if you're not, this offense will hurt you.
Yeah, and when it hurt us, you know, it kind of hurt us in bunches. You know, you could we jump up 21-7, and you know, right before half, they kind of start moving the ball, and then the announcer makes the comment, you know, well, Auburn gets the ball to start the second half, and then you instantly kind of have that, you know. Again, you know, if you kind of paying attention and see how that all fits together, you instantly kind of have the nightmare of, well, shit, they're gonna score here, get the ball, and then score right out of half, and we're gonna be right out of halftime a tie game. And you think, nope, that's not gonna happen. That can't happen. I've thought about it. It's too obvious of a bad thing. It can't happen. And then it happens. And then at the end of the game, you know, they score the winning or the tying and go ahead touchdown. You know, within, you know, 30 seconds of one another. You know, just those bang bang, you know, touchdowns. You know, they scored, you know, all of, I guess that's all, you know, four of their touchdowns, you know,
like 2 minutes or left,
back to back.
Yeah.
In just, you know, maybe 4 minutes or 3 minutes of game time.
Oh, sure. Every one of their time of possessions was like under 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And, it just, to your point, when we went up 21-7, I said, okay, now it's time to put this team away.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, okay, did we just relax a little bit? Because on Mason's big 40-something yard scamper right there before the half, we uncharacteristically had two or three missed tackles on that big run. And, you know, did we just rest on our laurels a little bit after being up 21-7 and relax a little bit?
I think we did. I think we did exhale, which to some degree is good because I think we needed to, you know, unclench, but I think we relaxed too much. I think at that point we said, oh, we've got this.
Yes. Well, hey, another thing I want to mention real quick before I pick on Cyrus a little bit is, before Nick Marshall had that big scamper in the first quarter, they converted a big 3rd and 18. And I just want to mention this for a quick second because this was a missed call by the officials that I was surprised they didn't catch. But Denzel Duvall is rushing on the end, okay, on the right edge where Nick Marshall scrambles.
Yep.
And the right tackle has got his hand all on his face mask, basically pulling his helmet. And poor Denzel Duvall, who is a sophomore, is really focused on this, okay, and not looking at Marshall. And so as Marshall is running outside of him, he's not setting containment because he can't even see because his helmet's getting yanked off.
Right.
And then he starts like motioning to the official. And, you know, this was a blatant call that they missed, and they converted this 3rd and 18. And I mention it real quick because, A, it was a blown call by them, which was bad. But and take nothing away from Duvall, because I would have done the same thing if I'm getting my helmet yanked. But there were several times in this ball game that we didn't show discipline at the defensive end.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just want to touch on, right, another thing we talked about in the preseason, right, is we need the Lorenzo Washingtons. We need the Brandon Diedrichs, right? We need the guys to just do their job.
Yep.
Well, when we played Cam Newton in 2010 in the first half, they had beat it to our players. Do not let him get outside of you in the pocket. Well, there were several times, including that last touchdown, that our defensive ends crashed down and didn't set the edge. We didn't keep him in the pocket, and it was more than one time.
Agreed. And we both talked about that, you know, kind of in our quasi pregame, that we didn't think we would have a problem with that with the personnel on this team.
Well, and to go to the touchdown for a second, right? Even there, Hubbard crashes down and he takes the fullback dive. And I'm sitting here thinking, why are you taking the fullback dive? There's other guys to cover the fullback.
Yep.
Your guy is the quarterback.
Yep.
And Nick Marshall comes completely outside of him. And now we find out from Saban in the post game that Cyrus is the one that made a mistake. He called him out nicer than you and I will. But apparently Ha-Ha was supposed to come up on the play, and Cyrus is supposed to take the wide receiver.
Yep.
Because you and I heard weeks ago, right, that in this – whoever wrote that article that broke down the secondary talked about on our corner scheme, right, they've always got the outside threat.
Yep.
Well, dude, and to be fair, it's in the moment, right? And so, you know, I'd screw up in the moment too, but it's the frustration of all these little things, right? If you're Cyrus and there's 30 seconds left in the game and they're at the 40 something yard line and they got to score a touchdown, right? How can you let that wide receiver alone? If Nick Marshall runs for another 5 or 10 yards before Ha-Ha tackles him,
who cares?
Well, okay.
Right.
There's only 30 seconds left.
Well, I think that I agree with you. And, you know, Cyrus did, you know, give up on his man, you know, for the sake of stopping the quarterback run. And I will say this, and, you know, I've seen Auburn run that play, you know, earlier in the season. Maybe it was another team. I've seen that play run earlier in the season, and I think it's a very well-designed play. It's a phenomenal play. I want to gush a little bit in its design, right? Because the whole idea with the option or the sort of the read option is to key on a person and then react based on, you know, how they play the play. And typically you think of that as a linebacker or a defensive end. You know, quarterback's going to keep the ball or he's going to pitch it based on what, you know, the end does. Well, this is that same concept, just in a completely different dynamic. It's the quarterback's, you know, and we've all seen the play, right? But the quarterback's sprinting out, and the option man is now the cornerback. Well, when is the cornerback ever the key on an option? It's like the cornerback doesn't know how to be the key on an option, right? And so the cornerback says, the quarterback's committed to running. I'm going to go stop the run. And Nick Marshall, look, he ran that to perfection because he got right to the line of scrimmage. I mean, he was going to run the ball. And, you know, and when as soon as Cyrus pulled off, you know, and a coach was, you know, was wide open. It was a very well conceived and well designed play.
Oh, sure. And on the replay, right, when they broke it down, his foot just barely
was about to touch on the blue line.
Yeah.
So he was about to go over. And
yeah.
And I will tell you, even going back to that third and 18 a minute ago that I was talking about, he did the same thing on that play. And CBS showed a great angle on the a separate camera angle of kind of following him running out of the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to see that Alabama is playing a two deep zone. And to pick on him for a second, Landon Collins was the guy on that play, because literally Nick Marshall is running right at the line of scrimmage and Stinson's about to nail him. And Landon Collins just leaves his zone and comes up to Marshall. And guess who he threw it to? He threw it to Coates.
Yep.
So of Coates' three catches, that was two of those catches.
Yep.
And to your point real quick, right, if you're Landon Collins, to be fair for a second, it's third and 18. There's no way with those two DBs over there, he's going to run for 18 yards.
Right.
But you find yourself drawing up to him and leaving the wide receiver wide open.
And what's so frustrating is, you know, it's Sammy Coates, you know, making that play. He's really their one, you know, kind of passing threat. And so you think, you know, and this is kind of the back of the napkin, you know, defensive coordinator, but you think
double team him.
Well, you think that, you know, let's make sure we have all our gaps covered, you know, for the running game. And then let's put a cornerback on Coates. And that is your only assignment of the day, is to stick in his back pocket.
Well, to your analogy real quick, right? It's like the analogy of running a box and one in basketball, right? Mm-hmm. Where you've got a shooter on the basketball team, and so you tell the other four guys you're going to play a zone, but this one guy's going to play man-to-man.
Yep.
And so, you know, as with you, I'm not saying I could be a freaking coach, but it's almost like you wish you'd have said, guess what? Deion Blue, wherever he goes today, guess where you're going?
That's right. That's right. You know, when he goes to the locker room, you know, you're going to have to remind yourself to come to our locker room. But you know, if he goes and sits down and gets a hot dog, you know, you're giving him ketchup. You know,
dude, that's a great point you just made, that you don't see that in football, but it makes you wonder in that situation on third and 18. And it's easy to do this now, but it's like 10 guys, y'all play zone. Deion, you play man. Everybody else is you're going to have zone help everywhere. And it's just going to be you playing man to man on Coates.
Right. Well, they used the basketball analogy in describing, you know, Marshall, that he was, you know, that he was almost like a, you know, a point guard with some of the, you know, drive the lane and kind of dish it out is kind of almost what he did in that play. And that's kind of what he, you know, when you think of an option quarterback, it's an interesting kind of comparison. And so you wonder if they're applying, you know, basketball techniques or, you know, philosophies on offense, what can we borrow from that on defense?
Right.
You know, we're going to have a form of box and one, you know, defense.
So, right.
I don't know.
No, I think that was a good point, but that's the biggest thing that frustrated me is that, you know, they scored at the beginning of the game due to the lapse. On Nick Marshall's run for a second, I guess I do want to touch on that very quickly, is that we had three safeties in the game there. We had Jarrett Williams, and we had Ha Ha, and we had Landon Collins. And it looked like Ha Ha on that play was motioning Landon Collins to almost come to the middle of the field some. And not to pick on any of them, Ha Ha and Jarek are over to the right, and Landon Collins is far over to the left. And it's like, none of them were in the middle of the field. And Nick Marshall saw that, and he said, hey, I think I can split y'all. And yep. I can split the three of y'all, and it's a sprint. And it's almost like Landon Collins, once he started coming, you know, I mean, he basically just ran right by him.
I think in some regards, you know, and you made this comment, you know, I think last year and you know, earlier this season, you know, playing Johnny Manziel, you don't understand his speed until you get beat by it. And, you know, I wonder if there's not an element of that, you know, with Nick Marshall. Let's not forget, he was a defensive back at Georgia. You know, they thought that he was going to be, you know, a Champ Bailey type corner, you know, kind of physical corner at, you know, in the SEC at, you know, at Georgia, right? And so you got to have some athleticism and certainly some speed to play that position. And so you think, well, he's a quarterback, he can't be that fast. No. You know, he was going to be a cornerback. You know, corner, right. Not quarter, you know, cornerback at Georgia. Now he's a quarterback at Auburn. He hasn't lost that speed. And so I wonder if there wasn't a little bit of sort of discounting how fast he obviously is.
Oh, yeah, because on that touchdown run, when you go back and watch the replay, all three of those safeties were all within 6 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
There was nobody back there that could have given any center field help whatsoever.
Yeah. And so, if I can get some push right here, then I'm gone because of his speed.
Oh, yeah. And so what was so frustrating is they scored in the first quarter, and it's like our defense adjusted, right, until they kind of relaxed at the end of the first half. And then after they scored that touchdown to start the second half, we shut them out again until 2 minutes left in the game.
Yep.
And so that's what's so darn frustrating to me of all of it is our defense played really well for 10 minutes of each quarter.
Yep.
Yep. Anything else on defense?
Well, I want to hit up the that's why I think, you know, to exactly that point and kind of circle back to, you know, to hit that again. That's why I think it would have been critical for us to make it a 2-score game, you know, right there in, you know, second half of the fourth quarter. Because that would have changed how they had to run their offense.
It would have. And something else I want to mention real quick, and I know we're going long, but something else I want to mention real quick is that we should have mentioned at the beginning of defense. This is the first game since he got hurt that we really miss Vinny.
Ah, okay, yep.
I just wonder, in some of the stuff we just got through talking about, right, yep. With the slow white boy been in a different position where he could have tackled him at the 20 and he wouldn't have had that touchdown run. And they would have had to settle for a field goal in this. And that play we just broke down, right? Could he possibly have been in a different position because of his veteran leadership that would have allowed him to make a touchdown saving tackle?
Yep. That's a great question. That's a great question. You know, real quickly, Mosley report. CJ had 14 tackles, and that's probably the quietest 14 tackles I've ever seen.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'd have to go back and watch the game again to try to find all those tackles, because I was surprised when I saw that on the stat sheet. You know, he obviously has had a great career. He obviously was all over the field with those kind of numbers. I just
don't recall seeing 14 tackles.
I don't recall seeing 14 tackles. And I guess what I'm trying to say real quick is unfortunately, you know, I wish you'd have had 7 tackles and a couple of them would have just been bone jarring hits. I don't mean that critical of CJ. I'm just saying, because you and I don't recall anyway near the 14, right? I wish the impact would have, you know, I bet you he'd take 5 of those away, you know, to have had some bone jarring hit. Cause
sure.
I think the way they ran their offense neutralized him from being able to fly around more like he normally does.
Yes. Yes. I agree with that. And I still, you know, maintain that he's, you know, one of the best linebackers to, you know, come through the program. So, you know, not knocking on him at all.
Oh, no. And apparently, and I don't have the number in front of me, but apparently if he gets another 15 or 16 tackles, he'll break the record for all-time tackles of any Alabama player to have ever played.
Yep.
I think he moved up to number 3, and he's got a shot here, you know, an outside shot to take over number 1. So how phenomenal would that be?
Yeah, that really would. That would be well-deserved. He needs, ironically, he needs another 14. And, you know, unfortunately, he's only going to have 1 game to do it.
Right. Right. No, that's true. Hey, talk about special teams real quick. We've already talked about Cade.
Let me hit you with this. Do you have a mini game ball for defense?
Man.
I almost let the question go because I have to answer it too.
I didn't mean to skip over it. As far as defensively goes, it's kind of tough because, you know, I guess I'm going to give it to Landon Collins. And only because he did have the, you know, he did have the fumble recovery, which was so instrumental in us scoring 21 points in the second quarter. We had some really good play. I mean, when you talk about the quietness of the defense and you talk about the 14 tackles, I mean, I was picking on Trey, but he had 11 tackles in the game, sure. Right? And Landon Collins had 9. And Adrian Hubbard, who I think had a, several bad plays, still had 6. And so,
man, it was a target-rich environment.
I, here's what I'll say. I think that I underestimated the effectiveness of this stupid triple option.
Yes.
And how difficult it is to defend.
Yes.
And so I think the defense played pretty well under the circumstances.
Yes.
If that makes any freaking sense.
No, it does. I mean, a couple years ago we played, you know, who was it? Georgia Southern, who you know, just beat Florida. You think just by talent levels alone, you know, even a down Florida should be able to beat a Georgia Southern. But, you know, it was a couple of years ago that, you know, Georgia Southern put up over 200 yards rushing against us.
Right. So,
you know, I guess, you know, we should have known better.
Yeah.
Easy to say that now.
Yes. No, absolutely. And, give me I don't think I can really name an individual player per se. I'm ready to fuss about special teams.
I like the play of Jonathan Allen, the little that he was in there. He made some good plays. I think he got a sack, and so I like to see the young guy you know, have a performance like that. You know, I guess that's about what I got. All right, special teams, tell me what you got.
Well, man, we talked about Cade Foster, and so I don't want to go over that again. But you know, let's add to our running 15 or 16 things.
Sure.
Let's talk about Cody Mendel, right? For as good of a season as he's had, of course, right? He's going to botch a punt because everything that could have happened in this game is going to happen, and allow the ball to be partially blocked, you know, which doesn't allow us to flip the field quite the same way. And so I just wanted to mention it real quick because here they are punting the ball down to our 1 yard line twice, and our star punter, you know, botches a punt, which is another example of how tight we seem to be playing in the first quarter.
Yeah, he just dropped the ball. Very fortunate to get that ball away. And you know, the way he's dropping the ball, you know, to his foot to punt, you know, the defender came in and got a hand on it. But it was at the like the top end of the ball rather than in the middle. And we want, you know, I was watching the game with my wife, and we watched kind of the replay a couple times. You know, I drive her crazy with the TiVo. But I said, look, if that dude's hand is an inch lower, it's a completely different, you know, ball. It's a completely different event. You know, it truly is blocked and you know, recovered at or near the line of scrimmage. The fact that he's still, you know, got 39 yards on that, you know, that's pretty good. And it was just, you know, centimeters away from being, you know, catastrophic.
Oh, no, it was. And the other thing I wanted to touch on real quick is I wanted to touch on the block field goal.
Yeah.
That we had in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
I just wanted to touch on that real quick because, you know, Ed Stinson, as a senior defensive end who's got the back protection on the right, he just did a really poor job of trying to block the DB and just really didn't get a good body on him at all. And that allowed him to come around with that sweeping left hand and just barely get a tip on the ball, or it would have been a made field goal.
Yep.
And so to be fair to Cade, you know, that would have also helped with his confidence. That would have been his second attempt. He would have nailed that first field goal at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Yeah. And now it's a 10-point ball game, to your point, you know, early in the fourth quarter.
Well, you know, and I want to do two things. You know, you talk about us playing tight. And if you go back and watch the first kick, and, you know, even the commentators, you know, commented that, you know, he looked to either be leaning the wrong way or took a misstep. He just looked, you know, and I think he approaches the ball, you know, not as smooth and as stride as most kickers anyways, but he's got his own rhythm, and so that's fine. And he's been quite successful this season. But he seemed to either be leaning or take a false step, or he just seemed out of sorts on that first kick from his very first step, and then he missed it. And we've questioned, is there a matter of fragility there? We don't know, and we've questioned it, and we've just kind of wondered. And then so from there, he goes on to have the other misses. And you talk about the block, and you know that would have been a nice make for him, not only the 3 points for the team, but certainly for his confidence as well. That would have been something. But I tell you, the mother of ironies on that block, Brandon Green is in there at tight end blocking the end. And so the kick is blocked, and the Auburn defender gets the ball, and he kind of trips over his own feet, but he gets back up, and Brandon Green pushes him back down to the ground. And then, of course, he's flagged for a penalty there, personal foul, 15 yards, because, yep, you know, the guy was already down. And maybe it's just me, but I just find that ironic that when we do tackle the guy on a blocked or missed field goal, we get a flag for it. And when we don't tackle them, they score the game-winning touchdown.
No, absolutely. That is miserably ironic. I guess the other thing on special teams I'd mention is I thought we covered the kicks well. I thought we had a couple decent kickoffs where we nailed it into the end zone. We just had some bad, yes, breaks where, you know, they downed those two balls at the 1 yard line. And we even overcame that, you know, considering. Yeah. And so there really wasn't, you know, outside of what we talked about with the kicks, you know, and I guess just to exclamate this for a second is that if Stinson blocks better, we get that field goal. And it was actually the last field goal we attempted, so I was wrong on the order there. Had we not had the illegal procedure, right, Cade gets the 28-yarder. And so it's just, even in that, man, there were other things at work. And so you and I talk about his psyche and building his psyche. I mean, this is the same guy that struggled, you know, 2 years ago against LSU. Yep. It's like, yeah, it's like when we saw that first kick he made, right, or attempted to make, and you just talked about his mechanics, it's like, man, we don't need anything else to give him an obstacle right now.
You're right.
There's nothing else he needs to have to climb over. Can it just be this one thing?
Yeah. And you know, and after that first miss, you know, on the sideline, he just looked completely dejected. And so you have to wonder, and everyone, you know, you have to wonder, you have to ask the question, was he shot for the day?
Well, and that goes back to what we said about, you know, that goes back to what we said about the, you know, 5 minutes left in the game at the 12-yard line. I think you let him kick it there and say, man, I'm going to give this guy some opportunity with the 29-yarder. Because on the field goal try on the series before that from 28 yards, he nailed it down the middle, yep, of the upright.
He did.
Had they not called the illegal procedure on Ari.
It's a dangerous line between, I'm going to stick, you know, and especially when it's a kicker, I'm going to stick by my guy. I'm going to stick by my guy and continue to, you know, let him kick, or I have to game plan around that weakness. And I think there's room for, you know, in any given game, in any game, you know, any given kind of situation, there's room to agree with both sides of that argument.
No, there is. And because you could even argue in this game, right, that he could have tried to bring Griffith on for one of those kicks in the fourth quarter. Sure. Just to go try to find the hot hand, right?
Right.
To see how the hot hand's going to.
Yeah. I mean, there's something heroic about, I'm going to stick by him. I'm going to give him another chance, and he's going to win the game for us. And, you know, and then that's something. And then there's something just football smart around, I can't put this game back in the hands of a single individual who right now is suspect to me.
Right. Well, I think it's important to point out here that as crazy as this game was, I think if we sat down and really found others, we could find another 5 or 10, or at least another 5. I mean, it's, you know, I read somebody yesterday make a comment about this game, which I thought was like, you know, he was talking about, is this the beginning of the end for Alabama? You know, as far as does Auburn have their number? And then he said, or is this the end of phase one and the beginning of phase two? And his comment was, I think he was a CBS sports writer. His comment was, Nick Saban has brought 3 national titles to Alabama,
mm-hmm.
but he has been part of 2, or he has been the benefactor as the coach of 2 of what will go down as the worst losses to Auburn in Alabama history.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
Yeah. How ironic is that? You've won 3 titles, but I can argue the 2010 being up 24-0 and the way they lost this game, arena football style,
yeah.
is probably the 2 worst losses I can ever recall of how we lost to Auburn.
No, that's an ironic ironic thought.
So, you know.
Well,
so
I do think, you know, I do think that, and, you know, look, we were going for 3 in a row. I mean, that's no small thing, right? I mean, it's another, you know, it's 4 years from now or 3 years from now before we can have a shot at doing that again, right? And that's if the planets align again. And so, you know, you're going for something that's very, very, you know, very rare. And so that adds, you know, kind of to the pain. Losing to Auburn is more painful than, you know, losing to Missouri in the SEC championship game might have been. And then also there's something to, you know, we know that we're not going to win it next year. You know, the quarterback situation and sort of the turnover. And that's a whole nother podcast. We'll spend the summer talking about that. But, you know, there's almost, you know, and I'm not discounting next season already, although maybe it sounds like I am. But we entered this season. We entered last season expectant. And next season, I don't think we'll enter the season with that same level of expectancy.
No, we won't. And, you know, another fun thing to throw in here, which we don't have time to talk about today, but I know I've been more of a playoff system in the, you know, having some type of playoff than you have when we've discussed this in the past. And obviously the BCS is going away, but how ironic, you know, that next year with a 1-play and a 4 and a 2-play and a 3, that we'd still be sitting here with a shot at number 4.
Sure.
And, you know, I guess I also want to mention that we, in this run of three-peat, right, which is why it's so, you know, ridiculous to try to do, which is why no team's ever done it. We were the benefactor in the last 2 years of just losing a little earlier.
Yes.
And for this one, you just can't lose the last week of the season and have any chance numerically.
Right.
Which is why, you know, it's so freaking ridiculously painful.
Yep. Well, we'll have, you know, we definitely need to devote some of the, you know, pre-bowl season and, you know, maybe even, you know, some of the summer talking about some of these topics, because I think there's a lot of content there that, you know, you and I have some passion around that we can put some shows together around. But why don't, you know, we don't have a game next week. We wish we did.
That's weird to say.
You know, and so, you know, in the context of, you know, when we'll do our next show, that's something, you know, we'll have to work on that. But, you know, because sort of the stake in the ground that I'll put, you know, looking towards our next game, and we don't know when it's going to be. We don't know the bowl. We don't know the opponent. And so all of that is unknowable, you know, right now. But I'll say this, you know, the biggest question that we have, you know, relative to that game is the depth of character on this team. Are we going to behave like we did in 2008 and be so disappointed that we lose to a Utah-style team in a BCS game? Or are we going to have the personal resolve and sort of just the pissed-off disposition that we throttle a Michigan State like we did in 2010 in the Capital One Bowl. And so I think that's the biggest question that sits before this team. Are you going to tank in the bowl game because, you know, you're all kind of, you know, disappointed? Or are you going to rally around we've still had a great season. We've still had had a great run, and we still have the opportunity to put, quite a cap on this experience.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know. I want to say it was C.J. Mosley, but I could be wrong. But there was some player quoted in the post game who loosely commented on that. And just simply, he quoted Utah and he said, we need to make sure that we're prepared, for this next game or something to that effect.
Yep.
And so I thought it was CJ, but realistically, my answer right now in the gut would be that we're going to fall somewhere in the middle there. What I mean is that I don't think we're going to lose to a Utah type team, but I also don't see us winning 49-7 like we did in 2010.
Right.
And so, I definitely think this team is going to have more mental toughness this far into the Saban era than they did in 2008 when they were only 1 year into the program.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. And so it's almost unfair to draw the comparison, even though it is kind of right there on the platter. So I do it, I kind of do it anyways. I think it's a fair question. And, certainly I hope that we rebound. We still have an opportunity to be ranked very high, which, is something that, we should aspire to. And going out there and competing hard and making a statement in that last game, I think I think that's significant.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to finding out who the opponent is. I've heard it might be the Orange Bowl. I hope for our sake that it's not the Orange Bowl. I don't want the players to have to go play in the same venue they played last year on January 1st, because I don't think that would help their psyche. I hope that it's the Sugar or the Outside Chance of the Rose Bowl.
Yep, I agree. One thing to kind of root for now is the SEC champion to leapfrog. And I say this realizing that it would probably have to be Auburn, and I hate to put them in the national title game. But one thing to root for is, them losing to Florida State in that game, and us matching up with Ohio State, who is snubbed for the national title, and they play the team that they least want to see.
I like how you finished that. I will just say, so the listeners know where I stand on this, that my hatred of Auburn runs deep. And even if it has the chance of continuing the SEC streak, I do not want them to be in the game. I hope Missouri beats them. I like your setup against Ohio State, but I hope Missouri wipes the floor with them at the Georgia Dome.
Well, we'll see. and it's
I had to get that out there because I don't want them in the freaking game. I'm sorry. I don't want
No. I want the opportunity to to hand it to Urban Meyer again.
Well, I have heard somebody I want to say it was Brad Edwards for ESPN that said there was an outside chance that you could see an Auburn Alabama rematch in the Sugar Bowl. He said that today, that if the Orange Bowl picks a different at large team like an Oregon or a Baylor, that a Sugar Bowl, given the chance to play an Auburn Cincinnati type of matchup, might be foaming at the mouth to have an Auburn Alabama matchup in the Sugar Bowl. How would that be?
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. I'd take a rematch with them. I'd take a rematch with them tomorrow.
That'd be a nice way to get some bad taste out of our mouth, right?
Yes, it would.
Well, man, I've enjoyed it as well as we can enjoy talking after a loss, which we don't normally do. Right. And I'm looking forward to getting this taste out of our mouth and getting another game. And unfortunately, we have to wait 30 days for that to happen.
Absolutely. Hey, just really quick, I want to hit up a couple of the reviews that we had on iTunes. Alabama Football Podcast is great. Love you guys. That's from CNerd86 and MJ All Day. Sends us the message. If you like the details, then this is the podcast for you. It only focuses on Bama. They cover not only the stars, but nearly everyone who steps foot on the field. From listening to this podcast, I know more about younger players and recruits. This is the best Bama podcast I've heard. So that's great. That's good news, right?
No, it's awesome, man. Glad everybody enjoys listening.
And that's the, you know, that's why we do it. So just get the word out and tell other people so that we can, you know, get some more, you know, some more feedback as to what we can do better and how we can improve.
Absolutely. So we're up to 44 reviews, which is phenomenal. I think we started the season with, you know, 9 or 10. The goal would still be 50. So if you want to reach out and give us a review to kind of make us feel better and wash away some of the pain from this loss, we'd greatly appreciate it. And we'll get those comments out to the listeners as we record our next show. So stay tuned. We don't exactly yet have a schedule, but hit us up on Facebook or go to the website and join. Sign up for our newsletter there. We'll send some updates there as to when we're planning our next show. With that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in and roll tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the tide. Got that, coach?
Aye.
Of course, roll tide.